Well, hello everybody and welcome to another day at the Damage Report. I am not your host, Francesca Fiorentini. John Iadarola will be back tomorrow, so get excited for that, but also stay here because it's gonna be a really good show. With me is the host of the show that premieres on the TYT network on June 7th, 11:30 a.m. Pacific, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. It's Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie, and with me is Dr. Rashad Ritchie.
It is so good to be with you. How are you, my sister?
I'm okay. I'm getting through this. One sentence at a time. It's like learning how to walk, kind of thing. Just like I often feel I speak that way. No, I'm really good. We've got a good selection of both wonky stories about infrastructure, but then also apparently Bernie likes mixed nuts and people have problems with that.
Good for Bernie, by the way.
Exactly. I want to know what's in your rider as well as everyone else's rider in the comments. And if you're here, why don't you hit that like button, subscribe, do it right now, share the stream, let people know. It's fantastic week. It is a fantastic week. You heard about infrastructure week. It's fantastic week. And also heads up, TYT's got something fun going on. It is called the Twitch pitch. So basically, if you think that you have what it takes to be TYT's next streaming star, submit a proposal, 2-minute audition tape telling us what you like, your knowledge about politics, gaming, sports, music, anything that sparks your interest. We want to know your expertise and your passion. So submit your videos by tweeting at the Young Turks and use the hashtag Twitch Pitch. TYT.com/Twitch Pitch for more information. Dr. Rashad Ritchie can tell you. You know, it's not always easy to find your groove about what you are passionate about, but when you do have it, it's fun.
Yep.
And you get a show. I mean, this is not Dr. Ritchie's first show, but it'll be the best. It's gonna be a good. All right. And with that, are you ready to get into this?
Let's get it.
All right. Well, Joe Biden is still trying for some reason to negotiate with Republicans and reach a bipartisan deal on infrastructure. Remember, Joe Biden proposed a $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan, which is his next priority after passing the American Rescue Plan and just before what he hopes will be the American Families Plan. Of course, both Republicans and Democrats have been negotiating over this for weeks. And just as a reminder about this infrastructure bill, it's not your run of the mill bill. It is pretty expansive and pretty transformative, you know, celebrated by a lot of progressives for what it included. So in addition to things like roads and bridges and infrastructure, sort of physical infrastructure, there was $35 billion in climate research and development, $25 billion for upgrading childcare facilities and making it more widely accessible, $400 billion towards home and community care for elderly and disabled folks. Huge win for that movement that's been clamoring for that. $10 billion for the creation of a civilian climate corps. So this is again part of what everyone heralded as, okay, Joe might actually be more progressive than it seemed like he was during the primary. Of course, Joe Biden is already capitulating on that $2.3 trillion. He came in at $1.7 trillion, $600 billion less than his original plan. And he's urged the GOP to put at least $1 trillion into an infrastructure package. And guess what? They came back today with their plan, coming in at $928 billion. That is far less than what was asked for. So what's in that? The GOP proposal does not include Biden administration priorities such as $400 billion for home healthcare, $100 billion for electric vehicle consumer rebates, or spending to upgrade housing and schools. So this is where it's at. This is where things stand. A lot of people, this is according to Jeff Stein at the Washington Post. He tweeted earlier this morning that the tentative relief among many progressives today is that the GOP counteroffer by relying heavily on repurposing old funding, so this is like COVID funding, is likely so inadequate that the White House will reject it and go a bigger/partisan route. That's according to aides. I want to get Dr. Ritchie, your opinion on this negotiation and where you think it's headed.
So let me first start by saying this. It's not just progressives who agree with this bill. Progressives have definitely made this bill a reality. But when you do the polling of voters, 57% of Americans are for the expanded understanding of infrastructure. That number only goes up to 58% when you add the language of bipartisan support. So basically, Americans are saying, we don't give a damn if you get this done by way of bipartisan support or you get it done through a one-party solution. Let's look at what infrastructure means. Republicans are coming back to the table trying to make this narrow definition of infrastructure to apply to roads, to physical structure only. But the definition of infrastructure means both physical and organizational. Mm-hmm. And we're not the only country who looks at infrastructure in that way. Let's be very clear. You have a highway bill, that's part of physical infrastructure, but you also have the superhighway. You have information that's shared at lightning speed like we are right now. This has become a new reality in how a country is organized. You must include these elements. And it's not just an infrastructure bill. Mm-hmm. And this is where I fought Democrats. I said from day one, they need to make up their mind. If they're gonna call this an infrastructure bill, that's a mistake. They need to call it an American jobs bill.
Yeah.
And initially, they had both of these narratives going at the same time. And they never really made the case that this is actually a jobs bill. It not only protects jobs, it helps secure other jobs. And it has a lot in it. So at this point, I really think Joe Biden, the president of the United States, may very well compromise again. Because the one holdout, even if you want to try to get this done through budget reconciliation to get the pure majority, just a 51 person vote in the Senate, you got Manchin, who has become a de facto president of the United States. And Joe Biden has not figured out a way to properly lead this guy or become transactional with the leadership of Manchin to get what he needs to get in the political realm.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like, again, we've been saying this a lot, you know, like why? I just want Joe Biden to set up an airstream in West Virginia and just keep talking, you know, get on top of it and just keep talking about the plan. Talk about what infrastructure would mean. Talk about what investments in green energy would mean in West Virginia. You know, and it does seem like Joe Manchin is amenable to some of that. But again, he's also beholden to his donors, to Mitch McConnell, and to all of the interests, of course, that the Republicans are also supported by. And I just wanted to read this out that, you know, apparently, he's not the only one. So there is a block of centrist Democrats that have been adamant that the White House seek a bipartisan infrastructure deal, which may give the administration little wiggle room to try to passing one without GOP votes. So it isn't, it's Manchin, it's Sinema. Who knows? Is it Chris Coons? Like, it might be a series of other Democrats. So this is why we can't have nice things, even when there's a majority in of Democrats
right.
in
and
the
here's
Congress.
What they're gonna try to sell. They're gonna come back and say, well, it's not everything that we want. We right. will accept this compromise, watered down version, but we're going to pass other legislation to amend this legislation in the future. You just wait and see. And it will never happen. You will not get it. You won't get it this year, and you damn sure won't get it next year after midterms. It's not going to happen. If you're going to get it, you must get it now. And if Joe Biden doesn't lead that way, then shame on him. And at some point, shame on us if we don't call him out on it and hold him accountable to an actual, true progressive plan for this country.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to wonder, someone who's already willing to cut their own proposal down by something like, you know, $600 million immediately to 1.7.
Right. It didn't even happen with somebody pushing back. He just did that part on his own initially.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, Dr. Ritchie brought up reconciliation, right? Budget reconciliation. Well, of course, remember when the $15 minimum wage tried to be put into the American Rescue Plan, which it was initially in, right? And Republicans and Joe Manchin said, no, 50 minimum wage, that has nothing to do with rescuing people or workers. I'm gonna pretend that that works out. And even the budget parliamentarian, the Senate parliamentarian saying, yeah, no, there's no way we can do that. So, you know, one of the arguments for settling and for doing this bipartisan deal is Well, we can pass the climate stuff and the home care stuff in a budget reconciliation plan, right? Which you don't need a major, or you just need a slim majority and you, it's filibuster proof, etc. Well, one, Manchin's probably not gonna get on board with that, so you don't have the majority. And two, who knows where the parliamentarians gonna be at on this? You know, like, do they think that like solar panels are part of the budget reconciliation? I mean, I doubt it.
Yeah, and it was such, it was disgusting to me to watch Democrats hide behind the parliamentarian. Let's be clear of who the parliamentarian is. Nobody elected this person. The position does not exist by statute, is not constitutionally mandated, is not even statutorily mandated, which means it's kind of a made up position. Mm-hmm. And in that position, the parliamentarian serves as an advisor, technically, to the Vice President of the United States, who is in fact in charge of the chamber. You can ignore the recommendation of the parliamentarian at any time. Everyone who's done a board meeting, they know the parliamentarian advises, but has no executive control whatsoever. And I thought it was laughable that all of a sudden Democrats threw up the parliamentarian and said, oh, the almighty parliamentarian has spoken. You know what that is? That is basically an office rule. That's all it is. Break the office rule, break it. In order to serve the majority of American citizens that voted you in, be on record for breaking an office policy. I can live with that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the idea that you're not supposed to take office supplies from your workplace.
Right.
Everybody does. It's part of your extended work. Sometimes you need envelopes at home, and that's fine. Okay? Yeah, technically you're not supposed to, but that's not stealing.
It sounds like you're talking from experience, my friend.
Yeah. Let's just say there's a labeler that I may have appropriated. One or two things. So yeah, obviously Biden says that he's committed to climate change, stopping climate change. I think the real thing, in addition to what you said, Dr. Ritchie, is he's got to surround himself with better people. Like, if he wants to get this done, he needs to not surround himself with his like traditional allies and centrist Democrats. He needs to have people in his corner who can help him fight. But the people in his corner, who are the people he's known for a very long time, let's be real, are not the ones who are gonna, you know, help him. They're not gonna push him, right?
No, not at all. And he is a reflection of what we know as corporate politics. He's an institutionalist. He knows these individuals, but he's leading in this century. And it's difficult. I get it. The guy does have a soul. He's not a Donald Trump like figure, but he's leading outside of his era. And he doesn't get it. He doesn't connect to it. Yeah. He doesn't understand the trajectory of this country in the sense that many of us do today. And I'm hoping at some point in the very near future, we don't have a lot of time for him to catch up, but in the very near future, I hope it clicks for him like never before.
Absolutely. Ooh, I'm gonna light some candles for that very thing. Okay, so Dr. Ritchie, you alluded to this before, but I just wanna, you know, let's talk about it a little bit more about where are the people at when it comes to infrastructure. Do they agree with Republicans? Well, Republicans don't want to spend any more money on infrastructure than they have to. They don't want to raise taxes. And they don't conceive of infrastructure as including things like education, childcare, home care, etc. What about their voters? Big surprise, they like it.
Yep.
They are in favor of it. Yes, in poll after poll after poll, turns out that the American people do conceive of infrastructure in a big way, and they like Joe Biden's plan. 51% up to 36% support it. They support Joe Biden's original $2.3 trillion plan, even when they're told it, quote, may increase the national debt. They're quite willing to raise corporate taxes to fund it. Oh, there you go. Problem solved. They represent the people. Can we be done now? A little bit more on that. Polls show broad support for Biden's position. When Americans are asked whether Congress should solely address infrastructure, such as roads and bridges, or should also include other types of infrastructure, such as energy, water, housing, healthcare, manufacturing, and communication systems, 51% chose the broader bill. And then this is from Politico in April, when asked to what extent various expenses could be considered part of the American infrastructure, most voters agreed somewhat or strongly that childcare and caregiving could be included. A 47% plurality said the same of paid leave, pretty good. And when a Marist poll inquired, do you consider long-term healthcare to be part of the country's infrastructure or not? 56% of voters said they did.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So,
how amazing is that, right? But once again, it shows that Democrats or progressive legislation is on the side of the American public by way of general sentiment.
Yeah.
However, Democrats have failed to articulate a messaging strategy to make the case to create political fallout for those who oppose the masses in America. How does that happen? You're right on the issues. You're right on the policy, you're right on the implementation, but you're still wrong in the politics of it.
Yes.
That is a messaging disconnect, a barrier that the Democratic Party has to overcome. The Republican Party, they've mastered it. They've mastered messaging so much that Republicans have to say they believe in a big lie that they don't.
Yes.
Only because of messaging.
I totally agree with that. I mean, look, this is the reason, you know, Biden's been given so many accolades lately and so much praise for sort of doing these really big things, but quietly. But he's not actually getting them done. He might be proposing them, you know, and he's like working behind the scenes. But again, we see in this sort of the way that, you know, we talked about the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, which is falling apart. We're now looking at this infrastructure bill, which seems to be falling apart when it comes to trying to, you know, work with Republicans, because Republicans are fundamentally not interested in working with Democrats. But the real thing is, there is an idea, Dr. Ritchie, there is an idea that does encapsulate all of those things, jobs, infrastructure, climate. I wonder what that idea is that young people really seem to like. They talk about it all the time. The Green New Deal.
That's right.
It is completely there. Everything is in that package. But because Biden and centrist Democrats are so afraid of the way it's been, you know, mislabeled as socialism and Marxism and da-da-da-da-da-da, they're playing into that narrative rather than reclaiming the narrative for themselves. And you're totally right. The vision isn't there. The politics aren't there. The popular support, AOC and Bernie Sanders being the most popular politicians, they're not out on front in this. And I don't think you can get it through without a groundswell of support from the people.
Yeah. And let me go back a little bit, and some people will criticize me for this, and that's fine. I'm here for all the smoke. Democrats were on the right trajectory until Bill Clinton came. Mm. Bill Clinton came and put brakes on the progressive wing of the Democratic Party and became a moderate of moderates. And it slowed down the progressive agenda of the Democratic Party. We have not really recovered from that. And what you see today, let's be honest, a lot of Democrats are simply left-leaning Republicans. And you see that as an expression in their international policy and the things they fight for locally. Now, they will give lip service to progressive policies, and they will say they support them, especially during a campaign, because they need the support of those who are young and ambitious and looking for transformation in America. But then when they get in office, they govern once again from the middle, rather than governing from the point of their values and policies that they echo during the campaign. And so we're recovering from these individuals who have been the gatekeepers of the party. And that's why it's refreshing to have the ideology of a Senator Bernie Sanders, AOC, Presley, and others, because they are what the Democratic Party should be today. But because of the slowdown, we've had to play catch up, and now we're starting to actually be in these positions of power.
100% agreed. I think that, you know, the idea that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz are the counterpoint, or they are the same as the squad, is utter BS, echoed by Meghan McCain and bad faith Republicans, you know, who are like, oh, they're just the same in the other. And we heard this before. We heard this about Bernie. Oh, Bernie is just a left wing Trump. No, he's not. He's not at all that. Like, he might have people who like him. He might have a message and a vision, but he's not a right wing. He's not, he is not a fascist. You know what I mean?
At all.
And so, exactly. And so that's why I think centrists misread the mark. They think, oh, we got to move to the middle. And they're playing, as we say in, like, you know, I guess theater or comedy, they're playing to no one. This is an empty theater. There's nobody in the front row of this seat to centrism. Thank you so much, Dr. Ritchie, for that. I love the way you put things. A year after the murder of George Floyd, many corporations and CEOs made very, very lofty and big promises about how they were going to change in the wake of this massive movement for racial justice and police reform. So how have those corporations done who were so keen to jump on that bandwagon? Not well. Let's just put it like that. So as protests unfolded in the weeks following his death, corporate America spoke out against racism and police brutality. Promises were made to invest in fighting racial inequality, supporting minority-owned businesses, lobbying for police reforms that address misconduct and accountability, and to provide more opportunities to Black Americans within these companies. I believe we have a graphic that shows just how much the words George Floyd and systemic racism and Black Lives Matter were used in the boardroom. So lots and lots of a spike in that discussion. But according to the Financial Times, an assessment of the changes that have been made in the intervening period suggests that Floyd's death did catalyze corporate diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. But on several key measures, more still needs to be done to change to turn executives' newly activist rhetoric into reality. So let's look at those various areas, all right? Number one, it's the most concrete. Did they donate the money? Spending. So American corporations have pledged to spend $50 billion on racial equity since Floyd's murder, according to a tally of public promises compiled by the Creative Investment Research. The funds were to be spread between donations to civil rights organizations, targeted investments in communities of color, and overhauls of the internal recruiting and training programs. Yet only about $250 million has actually been spent or committed to a specific initiative, according to an analysis by the research consulting firm. Let's just stop there. That is far short. That is $49,750,000,000 short of the pledge that was made. Now, I know some of these pledges are going to be over time, but Dr. Ritchie, what are your thoughts on just that piece?
Well, we should have known they were playing games when they made these pledges and then did not make the internal policy change to connect executive bonuses to diversity goals. So right now, all of your major companies, if you're an executive at one of those companies, you get a bonus. You get a bonus for reaching particular goals. When these companies refuse to connect their diversity number goals to your executive bonus, we should have known they were playing a game. Number two, a lot of these pledges that took place, obviously took place at the height of the controversy. And they went out, promoted this pledge. They had to spend very little money. I would argue they actually got more in advertising than they had to actually spend in partial adherence to their promise. So they're still winning while black folks are still losing. They did not get squarely behind the George Floyd Policing and Accountability Justice Act. They have not been actual advocates, as they said. And here's how you start really fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. Make sure you hire individuals of a particular background to be the executives and in charge of these corporations. We are a combination of three E's. I tell my college students this on a regular basis: experiences, exposure, and environment. That's who we are. We are a social design of our experiences, exposures, and environment. Me, yeah, as a black man in America, I have a unique set of three E's. I bring a unique perspective to a boardroom. I have a unique understanding of what's happening socially in our community. Those are the people you have to hire. In a recent study, only 37% of actual companies, major companies, have some level of diversity inclusion training or trying to reach diversity goals in their corporate ranks. That's, yeah, sad, that's a minority of the businesses, but all of the businesses said they were on board with moving this country forward and down with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like even the progress that was made, the most progress was made in hiring. And yet that in and of itself, especially among like the Fortune 500 companies, is not enough. So just a little bit more on that. Fortune 1000 firms have made notable progress diversifying their C-suites and boardrooms. In December, Nasdaq CEO Adena Friedman proposed a new rule requiring companies listed on any Nasdaq-owned stock exchange in the US to disclose consistent, transparent diversity statistics regarding their board of directors. The proposal would require most Nasdaq companies have, or to explain why they have not, at least 2 diverse directors, which may include 1 woman and 1 board member of an underrepresented minority group. But recent data shows that most of those diversity gains have gone to women and Latinos and not black Americans, according to Mike Heider, the president and CEO of Executive Leadership Council, a national organization for current and former black CEOs and senior executives. So that right there is essentially that, you know, 2 diverse members, which is very nonspecific. It's not even clear how big the boards have to be, just 2 diverse members, underrepresented, and that most of them have gone to women. So again, when it's not explicitly laid out, like we would like, or we should have a certain number of black like board members, then it doesn't happen. If you just broadly characterize it as diverse, you're not gonna get black folks. So Adam, Dr. Rashad or Richie, what do you think?
Isn't it ironic that the entire genesis of this started with Black Lives Matter? Yeah. The individuals who are the public sacrificial lambs, like George Floyd, are black. And corporations say, we're down with BLM, so let's hire a white woman and somebody other than a black person to serve on the board of directors. As a matter of fact, let's make that the policy so that we don't have to say the word black in our hiring practice. Now let's go back to what a lot of politicians will say. Well, we can't make laws that simply cater to one group or one race. They'll say things like that. One race, you can't make a law to say that. But I remember laws were made to say exactly that, when city governments and county governments and state governments said white only, black's not allowed. Mm-hmm. That was the statutory language. We know it has been done. And if there's not an incentive, and once again, what we're seeing is systemic bias being played out even inside of the groups where we should be coalition. These biases are continuing to play out at the same rate where Black Lives Matter or organizations that are represented by black folks will bring it to the forefront of corporate America, and corporate America will respond by putting black folks at the end or the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to actual corporate action.
Yeah, and remember, this is not Fortune 500 or like the top 2 or 3 companies. It's a Fortune 1000. There's a lot of companies. And yeah, a lot of them might be, you know, financial companies, tech companies, etc. But look, I'm not someone who thinks that suddenly when you diversify a boardroom, the goal of like an investment firm becomes any more like actually benevolent than it really is, you know, or that of, you know, a pharmaceutical company is incredible. But I do think it matters. I do think it does change a culture, and I do think that it isn't nothing. Like, I mean, and this is sort of like, yes, we're all trying to get free from these general like systems, like capitalism, exploitative capitalism.
Right.
But in the meantime, the incrementalism on that can mean, you know, diversifying boardrooms, and it does matter. And like Dr. Ritchie was saying, experience of the people in the room also still matters. I also am thinking about corporations like Amazon, who are like, we're gonna put our black stories up, you know, and like you can have our playlist where you watch all of the movies with, you know, Denzel Washington or whatever, you know, like,
right.
And it's just like, it's so pathetic and it's so mealy mouthed, and yet I am happy that it exists. And so I'm of two minds. The problem is, if these corporations, cause you know, Amazon actually committed money, I'm sure they did. I don't have the breakdown of exactly which corporations did or did not pledge money, but you only have $25 million of the $50 billion pledged by these corporations. Come on. You know, meanwhile, they've been making hand over fist money in this pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And hand over fist money, not to be too whatever, but like selling black culture, right? Back to the American public at large, benefiting from black culture, black labor at all levels of the corporate structure, from minimum wage to culture workers, you know, to professionals, to professors. And so put your money where your mouth is, and they haven't.
What you see happening is that corporations basically signed up for this agenda to give themselves protection. And some of them have been so crafty that not only did they give themselves protection, but they also were able to create earned media to the tune or higher than what they actually gave money to, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of them, I would dare to say most of them, will not actually make good on their promise, because their promise was gratuitous. And a gratuitous promise is typically not enforceable in a court of law, and most of these nonprofits will not hold them accountable to that degree. And they will be able to say, hey, I pledge 100 million, they give 50,000, and then they say, oh, our funding priorities have changed since then. Well, in the meantime, they've received like $1 million in advertisement and articles and good public relations because they said they were going to give a whole lot of money.
Yeah. One final piece on this that I wanted to ask you about is pay equity. So it turns out that, and this is from the same Financial Times article, when Just Capital released a tracker of companies' commitments to racial equity earlier this month, only 31% of the country's 100 largest companies were analyzing how equitably they paid employees of different races and ethnicities. Only 31%. So that implicit bias is just allowed to fester. You're like, I don't know why. I mean, yeah, you're doing the same job and you're black and you make 50,000 less than your counterpart, or 30,000 or whatever, which happens all the time. I think everyone has a story of being utterly shocked by a pay gap between whether it's people of color and white people, women and men. Like, you'd be surprised what corporations are getting away with.
Yeah, think about this. 31% of the companies are actually looking at it, right? So the vast majority of companies are saying, we're not going to look at it. Now, maybe you arrived at the problem by way of implicit bias or unconscious bias, but you remain in the problem by way of intentional bias, because you refused to evaluate your company on a social marker that should be part of the design of your corporation. So at some point, it's no longer implicit. Once it is brought to the forefront of your attention, it is now intentional.
Turns out Bernie Sanders is a little more basic than we thought. Look, a socialist has got needs, people, and somehow it's scandalizing many who probably didn't like him very much in the first place. So this is an excerpt from the Battle of the Soul inside the Democrats' campaign to defeat Trump, where author Edward Isaac Dover reports that following Sanders' surprisingly strong 2016 presidential campaign, the Democratic Socialist staffers put together a quote, Senator Comfort memo detailing his specifications for each hotel stay on his travels. So guys, Bernie Sanders sometimes wants a soft bed, all right? He doesn't sleep on plywood, unlike, you know, dedicated revolutionary socialists. He's not sleeping in the jungle like Che Guevara. The guy's got some needs. Okay, so according to the Dover, Sanders preferred suites with bathtubs and a king size bed, which had to have a down comforter or another blanket in the closet. He preferred that the extra blanket be dark blue and made of cotton. How dare you? A couple more things. Sanders required his room be kept at 60 degrees, pretty chilly. Even if that meant opening a window in the winter or manually overriding the hotel's climate control system, the comfort memo also reportedly required that Sanders' hotel rooms be stocked with green tea with honey, Gatorade, and assorted nuts. I like the cashews. I do not like peanuts. Do not get me nuts. An assorted means assorted, multiples of different ones, cashews, almonds,
that's actually pretty
pecans,
good.
Not all peanuts. This right. is not an airplane.
Good for Bernie Sanders on all of that. I was actually happy when I read that. I said, good for this American treasure, this American hero, for being able to enjoy a couple of things, some comfort. The man works 7 days a week, top to bottom, right? He is responsible. The ideology that he brought to the mainstream public is responsible for a lot of the transformation you see in America. And here's what they do. And I just gotta be serious about this point. They know his ideas are right. They know that generally Americans agree with his ideas once you get them out of the spin manufacturer. And so they can't attack the ideas. So they attack things that don't even have an ethical question connected to them. Right. Who gives a damn that the man likes a certain kind of peanut or he has a room temperature? Hell, he's 79 years old. He can have what he wants to have. He's one of my elders. You absolutely, if I work for Bernie Sanders, he's one of my elders that I respect. I'm going to make sure he gets everything on that list.
Yeah.
What's the big deal?
Like, not to be totally honest with you, how many of us for like a stipend would like help Bernie find Gatorade and green tea with honey on a campaign trail? I feel like a lot of people would give that considering the amount that he's given back. But like, oh, I've got you, sir. You know, like, yeah. Did you want Arctic Thunder or I don't know what the Gatorade flavors are or Slimer? Of course, Fox News hates this, that Bernie has requirements and wants to sleep comfortably before he does, you know, 15 events that day. This was their headline. Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders has a long list of diva demands when it comes to his travel. Oh,
it's God. Better than Trump's demands of cheeseburgers from McDonald's.
Green tea with honey, it's so elitist. But right. But to be fair, and especially after his, you know, minor heart attack, how many of us weren't like, God, I hope he's eating well. Like, I hope he's got, you know, no fast carbs, some nuts, some green tea, not drinking a lot of alcohol. You know, it's not like, you know, this isn't like a band in the 70s that's like, I need all my lines of cocaine laid out for me when I come off stage. You know, like, it's not that.
You are a great impressionist. I did not know you had that skill until today on the show. That's quite amazing.
It's a little bit lighter of a show than we had Tuesday, Rashad. So thank you, appreciate it. The other thing, and this is interesting, right? So, you know, we've all seen the photos of Bernie on like planes, commercial airlines in coach, you know, in the middle seat, like this is the sacrifice I must make, you know, like that. And apparently in the 2020 campaign cycle, he started taking private jets and was like kind of enjoying them. Do we feel like that is something, can we make a whole news segment out of that on Fox? Dr.
They can. The man had to get to places quickly.
There you go.
Get on the jet.
It's true. And especially with COVID, do not get around people. Do not get near COVID. But of course, I'm sure like the whole private jet discussion was totally divorced from the COVID discussion. It's like, no, the real socialist goes and just licks other people's faces in the global pandemic. Oh, it's so stupid and so funny. And to be honest with you, and this is minor, but I kind of like that we know a little bit about Bernie Sanders, the man, because he's so stingy with details on like the things that he likes, you know? I interviewed him once and I was like, "What's your favorite bagel?" And we were in a bagel shop and he was like, "Poppy seed. I like the poppy," you know? Mm-hmm. And it was a cute moment because he doesn't talk about what he likes. I mean, it's almost like if this were Hillary Clinton, she'd be like, you know, hot sauce in my bag, green tea right. with honey in my hotel, you know?
I was so upset at our dear sister Hillary Clinton for all of that. Just for the whole, let me appropriate black culture in these answers, because one of my staffers told me how to respond to get black people to like me.
Yes.
I have hot sauce in my bag. It was just so utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, meanwhile, Bernie Sanders already has the white vote. I mean, he didn't use, "I've got green tea with honey and nuts." You're like, all right, well, I'm kidding. I'm joking, obviously. That's the Asian vote. We love our green tea. All right, well, let's move on. Speaking of someone else who is very particular about their needs, everybody probably remembers Amy Cooper, who was the white woman in Central Park who managed to call the cops on a black bird watcher while also like choking out her dog. You guys remember her? She was actually fired from her job for that incident. But if there's one thing we can count on Karen's doing, it's being litigious AF. So Amy Cooper, a white woman who called the police on a black bird watcher in Central Park last Memorial Day, is suing the company that swiftly fired her over her controversial incident. The investment firm said, "We do not tolerate racism in any kind at Franklin Templeton." And that it had, the investment firm said that the day after the incident, it said that it had completed an internal review and decided to terminate her effectively. She says, though, in her federal lawsuit this week against Franklin Templeton, the company never investigated the incident that led to her firing, the confrontation between her and Christian Cooper. Her lawsuit claims that her employer discriminated against her because of her race and gender. Okay, at least she didn't say reverse racism, but she felt discriminated against. Before I get your thoughts, Dr. Ritchie, I just want to play, just in case we forgot how sort of vile this moment was, just play that one clip of Amy Cooper threatening Christian Cooper.
"I'm asking you to stop recording me.
Please don't come close to me.
Please take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
And I'm taking a picture and calling the cops.
Please call the cops. Please call the cops.
I'm gonna tell them there's an African American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
Excuse me?
Okay, then she starts to basically cry. We've seen this a lot. So she says, "I'm gonna tell them there's an African American man who's threatening me in Central Park." And then she calls the cops and starts to cry. And essentially it sounds like from her voice that she's in immediate danger. And you can tell from the video, incredible amount of distance, was never in danger. Dr. Rashad Ritchie, her company fired her. She's now filing a lawsuit against them. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, their brother would still be in jail today if he had not had that video. She weaponized her whiteness. That should be a hate crime. Mm-hmm. She was eventually arrested for filing a false police report, basically, and they dropped the charges because she took some kind of racial sensitivity training. Well, I guess it didn't work because now the audacity of this woman, this Karen, to file a federal freaking lawsuit. And I have to say this, because part of the narrative has been that white women are afraid of black men. Every Karen that we have seen, these Karens aren't afraid of any of them. They get in their face, they curse them out, they pretend to be afraid for the sake of making them a criminal. But there is no fear. We saw no fear in Central Park Karen at all. So now she's claiming there's discrimination against her when she literally tried to take the freedom of a black man for doing absolutely nothing illegal, and she made a false police report against the individual. I'm sure this company has what's called a morals clause, This lawsuit will go absolutely nowhere. And it really doesn't matter if they involved her in the investigation or not. I read some of the claim for this lawsuit. And the biggest claim is no investigation according to them was done because they did not include her. It is not a requirement to include you in the investigation. They can do it as they seem, as they deem fit, as they see it, and they did so.
Yeah, and I think that the video very much speaks for itself. Look, I'm not someone who is like, we should absolutely, you know, be in the business of getting people fired from their jobs. And I don't believe we should be in the business of making people forever pariahs, right? But I also think that that was a private company that made their own decision. And I don't think that, you know, that's it. That's their word. You know, if I was in the same position, I don't know if I would have done the same thing. I'm like, maybe it's even like letting her off too easily to just be like, bye, it's not my problem anymore. But it is very revealing. And again, we just talked about diversity in boardrooms, diversity, especially in like the financial sector, which is probably one of the least diverse sectors, which was where she worked. And imagining being like a black coworker of Amy Cooper and having to go to work, I would feel horribly unsafe to go to work with someone like that. And I think this was my favorite line from her defense because it speaks to what she did was deeper than racism, right? It was like racism squared. So she says in her lawsuit, I don't know which graphic this is. She said she did not call the police because she was racist, but because she was alone in the park and frightened to death after being selected as the next target of Christian Cooper, an overzealous bird watcher engaged in Central Park's ongoing feud between bird watchers and dog owners. This is so funny. I love that there's like Central Park beef and it has to do with like bird watching and dog owning, but it is, she's saying, no, I wasn't, I'm just a victim. I'm on the dog side because clearly she treats the dog with respect by choking it, you know, versus the bird watcher side. But she's not racist, but that's not exactly what Dr. Ritchie said. She wasn't being racist towards him, but she was weaponizing racist institutions of policing to basically sic the police on him.
Yeah.
Now, right?
Yeah, and she understood her power very well. And that's what you have to notice in that entire dialogue. She was well aware of how to weaponize her whiteness. She was well aware that these institutions contain systemic bias that would naturally criminalize him, believe her story over his, but the brother had a recording. The unsung hero in all of these cases. But it speaks to a larger dynamic, and the larger dynamic is you have countless Americans walking around right now refusing to challenge that norm, refusing to challenge that evil that exists because at any time, they can call in their chips and try to benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. I want to squeeze in one more story if we can do this real quick. This is about a Capitol rioter. We're skipping ahead because this is just too good. So you've heard of the Twinkie defense. Now we've got the muffin defense. So self-proclaimed QAnon shaman, or every guy at Burning Man, was indicted on 6 federal charges and faces 25 years or more in prison if convicted, unless his latest defense works. And that latest defense is involving a muffin and him preventing someone else from stealing a congressional muffin, okay? So this is, he made the claims in interviews before, but on Wednesday, lawyers for the shaman, whose legal name is Jacob Chansley, linked to a YouTube video entitled "Jake Stops Muffin Stealing" as part of a motion to secure his release before his trial. So he basically says that he prevented someone else, another rioter, from taking a muffin out of Congress, and that is why he should be let go or given less years. Let's watch the video he's talking about real quick. Nancy's muffin. That's Kevin McCarthy's muffin. That's a blueberry? Uh-uh. If it was a bran, totally. But not the blueberry. So there he is. This is the man who stood on the podium in the Senate chambers and screamed like, I don't know what, like an animal in the middle of the Senate chambers. And yet, that is his defense. Dr. Ritchie, what do you think of this? Does this hold up in court?
I love it. I love that we're seeing how much of a coward these individuals are and the insane defenses that must be promoted. Of course, this does not hold up in court because you've already engaged in breaking and entering, criminal trespass, obstruction of justice, failure to obey. Hell no, this doesn't hold up in court. But I love the fact that when he goes to prison, somebody's gonna call him Muffin Man.
It better be an organic muffin because again, this is the same prisoner who refused to eat any food that wasn't organic and he got his organic food. How many people in prison have gotten organic food when they required it or even had the audacity to think that they could require
it? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the confidence of it all. If I had the kind of confidence that some of these people had, like, you know, Central Park Karen saying she was discriminated against, this guy saying, no, I was actually trying to stop somebody else from breaking the law, okay? If I had that kind of confidence, it's no telling what I would be in life right now.
Maybe that's his thing. Maybe he just stops people from like taking muffins, but it's mostly because it's the carbs. He's like, no, it's gluten, you know?
Yeah,
like,
is a real believer.
I feel like that's what it was. It wasn't because he was stealing. It was because it was like, that's bad for you. That is a process. There's cornstarch in there, cornstarch.
Right, he was slapping the hand.
My gosh, well, Dr. Ritchie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
For this Thursday on the Damage Report, I may do a couple more stories, but I just wanted to let you go and thank everybody and remind them that they need to watch Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie premiering on June 7th, 11:30, 2:30 Eastern. It's gonna be amazing. And tonight, he's got a whole breakdown with Anna Kasparian on The Conversation at 5:30. So make sure you stay tuned for that as well.
And let me say this, I want everyone to go to the YouTube page. You can go right now. Indisputable TYT, so youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. Go ahead and subscribe to that page. It's free, takes like 2 minutes, become a subscriber, all good content. We already got content there now. Thank you so much, always a pleasure.
Yes, take very good care. And yeah, we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
All right, well, let me move into a little bit more. It's just me, you and me. Keep the likes coming, keep the comments coming. We're gonna read through them all. We're not gonna have another weird break. All right, so this is a story that kind of has been upsetting me recently, and let's talk about it. So the CDC is getting a little too excited about how well the vaccine rollout is going and how successful it is. It's now decided it is not going to track any mild cases of COVID in fully vaccinated people. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has stopped investigating a breakthrough infections among fully vaccinated people unless they become so sick as they need to be hospitalized or die. The breakthrough infection, just their words, is when a fully vaccinated person becomes infected with COVID-19. The new CDC reports show that such a breakthrough infection may occur in just 0.01% of all fully vaccinated people. The rationale for this change is to focus on cases that are of most importance to public health. It's not a resource limitation question, said Tom Clark, MD, MPH, Deputy Director of the Division of Viral Diseases at the CDC and lead of the agency's vaccine evaluation team. Okay, I read this and I'm like, why? Why would we stop tracking COVID cases in fully vaccinated people? And I can't help but think that maybe it's because maybe because they don't want to admit that some people, 0.01% of people are getting COVID, because again, they're trying to bolster the vaccine for people who are reticent and don't want to get it. But it makes no sense because we still don't know. We don't know how long the vaccine actually is good for. We don't know when we're going to be needing booster shots. And we don't know how effective it is against all the variants. We do know it is effective against most of the variants. And it turns out that the people who have been fully vaccinated, who have received or who have gotten COVID, have one of the variants. And again, these are large and in large part mild cases. The problem is that mild cases could potentially still spread. It just makes no sense in my mind why you wouldn't track them. Look, the US is averaging about 30,000 COVID cases a day still. That is way down. It's probably the lowest it's been, I believe, for 11 months. So we're almost a year, over a year into this. We're at the lowest we've been since then, but 30,000 is still a lot. Now, a lot of that is, of course, among unvaccinated people. Currently, only 50% of Americans have gotten one shot, 40% are fully vaccinated. And we know, we've talked about it on the show before, we're not going to reach that herd immunity. We're still having to convince people to get vaccinated. But I think the more honest the CDC can be about the reality that, yeah, there is a slim chance there are people who still get COVID, and to track that, where were they? Were they indoors, right? Were they in touch with children who, like I've said on the show before, are just walking piles of phlegm? How did they get infected? I'm curious. It shouldn't just be left to when they are hospitalized. But maybe this is also a sign that COVID is becoming less and less of this pandemic and more of an endemic flu type situation and sort of what right wingers always imagined it was going to be, even though they're not getting vaccinated either. I just want to read about how many people have actually been infected with COVID even though they got vaccinated. Earlier this year, the agency was monitoring all cases. Through the end of April, when some 101 million Americans had been vaccinated, the CDC had received 10,262 reports of breakthrough infections, they're calling them, from 46 states and territories, a number that was very likely a quote, substantial undercount. So that's another reason, you know, another thing is Bill Maher got COVID and he didn't have symptoms. He was just testing every day. So a lot of folks might have undetected COVID. Not all scientists, it's not just me who's questioning this, guys. I know I like to imagine myself a scientist, but some scientists are unhappy with this. This is according to Michael Kinch of Washington University. Understanding as much as we can about breakthrough cases is essential, they said. I'm not supportive of this change. I'd rather err on the side of having too much information, he told MedPage today. My worry is that missing variants could potentially evade the effectiveness of vaccines. When we find a variant like that, we want to snuff it out as quickly as we can. Because this is more context, because the viral strain may not only cause only mild illness in one person, but deadly illness in another. Not tracking mild breakthrough cases could risk missing out on the full picture of the SARS-CoV-2 infection, he added. Of course, right wingers, when you start tracking mild COVID cases, will say, oh, look at how many people have COVID, even though they got vaccinated. Again, mild is the key phrase, not clogging hospitals, not needing like any kind of emergency action, not being put on a ventilator, and obviously not dying. And that is huge. And so the benefits of this is not calling into question the benefits of the vaccine at all. It is not calling into question the cost benefit of having a day in bed versus months and months of COVID. But there have been cases of people who've been fully vaccinated who did get COVID, who are struggling with the long-term consequences. Another thing of part of this, and I'm sure we all know folks who have long COVID who've survived, but they still have effects, right? They're still being impacted. They've also gotten vaccinated, unlike Rand Paul, who somehow thinks because he got it, he's immune, which is not actually true. But we should be studying that. So I don't know, I think the CDC, between the no mask mandate indoors and this, I feel like they're a little bit on one. They're a little bit like, I don't know, they've had too much vaccine. They're floating on that, you know, that extra Fi's high. They got like a third dose and it's put them in some weird headspace. So yeah, not really sure how I feel about that. Hey, you guys, check out the Bituation Room podcast. If you like me, if you like comedy, if you like the irreverence and the act outs, I promise you, you just any request for any imitation or any like, I'll do it. You want Jeanine Pirro? You've got it. Like anything. But come on the show, 5-8 Eastern on Sundays, except for this Sunday because Mama tired. But most Sundays, you can find me there. June 6 is our next show. And thank you so much, everyone, to produce this show. The TDR team, John Iadarola, is back tomorrow with Brett Ehrlich. And until then, stay safe out there, stay sane out there, and slay out there. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Iadarola. I'll see you soon.